Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey gang, we'll jump into the show here in just a second. But first, if you're only listening to the free portion of the Bob Seska Show on Apple Podcasts and so on, you're only hearing the first hour. There's an additional 20 minutes of show after the end credits roll, and it's all happening on our Patreon page. Of course, I'm talking about the Postmortem Show at patreon.com/BobSeskaShow or simply BobSeskaShow.com. It's a completely unfiltered, commercial-free continuation of all the fun and news, and it'll only cost you $5 per month, and you'll be supporting this fully independent podcast. Don't miss out. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com. Bookmark it, send it to all your friends, and we thank you in advance. And now let the cartoons begin.
The Bob Seska Show.
Bob Seska.
Bob Seska. You really are sick.
The Bob Seska Show.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, July 28, 2021, and this is the interview edition of the Bob Seska Show on the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. Hi, what's up? My name is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Hello. Day 190 of the Biden-Harris administration, 468 days until the 22 midterms. Find me on Instagram at TheBobSeska and on Twitter at BobSeska_go. So whenever I have Cliff Schechter on the show, I sometimes think to myself, does Cleta Mitchell remember his takedown of her on MSNBC so many years ago? If you haven't seen the clip, you got to go to YouTube, search for Cliff Schechter, Cleta Mitchell, and MSNBC. You can thank me later. Anyway, we're talking with Cliff Schechter today, the co-host of the Unprecedented Podcast, patreon.com/unprecedentedpod and sexyliberal.com. I got to ask Cliff today about the increasingly monetized disinformation industry in America, the Red Hat Entertainment Complex, as I've been calling it, and how it's impacting the pandemic, our politics, whether America can endure with so many people making millions and millions and millions of dollars on nothing but lies and nonsense. I also want to get Cliff's reaction to the 1-6 Select Committee, of course, the hearings from yesterday, whether there will ever, ever, ever be a crisis in this country in which we leave politics behind, even just briefly. Lots to discuss today, so let's get down to it. Meantime, if you like what you hear today, don't forget to subscribe to our bonus content at patreon.com/BobSeskaShow. Okay, let's catch up with the great Cliff Schechter. How old are your boys now?
They are 14 and 11.
So neither of them are eligible for a vaccine, right?
No, my older guy got it, thankfully.
Oh, hey, great.
Yeah, the pain in the ass is the younger guy because we have to, you know, like he's going to be 12 and that's what you need to be is 12.
Yeah.
And unless they lower the age, they've said they may have, you know, they may be able to do that soon if they think that, you know, whatever tests they have to pass. But he's got about 4 months until, you know, he's going to turn 12. And that's what's such a royal pain in the ass, because everything we've read about the viral load is you may not get really sick if you have the vaccination, if you get the Delta thing, but you still can pass it on to people.
Yeah.
They really don't want to give it to him.
What's your policy for your household? What have you and your wife set up in terms of being kind of a mixed household? You've got one person in there who doesn't have the vaccine.
We are for a little while pre-Delta variant. We were starting to go some places, you know, eat some meals indoors, still in places we tended to trust and where they were spacious.
Yeah.
And we were not near people. We wore masks everywhere else, you know, for the most part. But now we're going to start pulling back on eating meals and stuff like that. I mean, we're still not, we're not Louisiana or Arkansas or Missouri, one of these places that's freaking blowing up.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah,
at least that's good. But, you know, I mean, you still have to be careful. And I live in a neighborhood within a city, within a county, all of which gets better and better when you look at it in terms of the vaccination rate.
Oh, that's
good. You're probably in my neighborhood of Cincinnati, you know, the kinds of people that live here, the education level, the vaccination rate, something like 85% or more.
Oh, that's, it's very, that's high. So great. Yeah, that's really good to hear. And in fact, Ohio generally is doing reasonably well in terms of new infections. So as you were saying, you know, like, it's not Missouri, it's not Florida. So in that sense, there's some relative safety there, I think, for you guys.
That's the way. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but I don't want to take anything for granted. And you know, I get that, that he's, you know, he's a serious soccer player and in good health. And and as an 11-year-old, he probably wouldn't, you know, he'd probably be okay. It doesn't mean I want him to get it. We don't know what the long-term effects are of any of this. And so we're going to be, you know, the other three of us being fully vaccinated, we're going to be still as careful as possible. It's, you know, luck, I guess. Some of it is that, it, you know, in a way, if this, this craft's going to happen, at least it's happening at a time where it's not the winter. Because we can still do most things outdoors. You know what I mean? Like, I went out with him for dinner last night, and we went to one of these places, you know, that is fully open. Like, there's a roof, and there's no sides. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, right. So yeah. Kind of like a gazebo. Yeah. I've seen places like that. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, he still wore his mask when he walked in and walked out. He had to take it off when he ate. And I figure that level of safety, we're really lowering the chances by a hell of a lot. But fully indoor stuff, I don't think we're going to, we're really going to, you know, do, or we're going to try to hold off. So taking him to the pool, I feel safe, you know, taking him, you know, stuff like that. But when it comes to indoor things, or an outdoor pool that we belong to, but when it comes to like indoor stuff, we, you know, we got to get, we got to make it. And luckily, I guess I would say, I think we got a good chance, because by the time it starts getting cold, his birthday will be before that. So
is he feeling left out where everyone else has been vaccinated and he hasn't? And does he feel like he's like, not the black sheep necessarily because it's not his choice, but does he feel like, oh crap, I'm the only one now and I wish I wasn't?
Well, I mean, he's a confident guy. He probably wouldn't, except for we all pummel him because of it and make fun of him and, like, you know, like just beat on him, like the stuff from like Full Metal Jacket. We put soap inside of like the pillowcases.
don't
red every day.
Don't start calling him Private Pile. Whatever you do, do not call him Private Pile.
From what I remember, that does not end well, Bob.
No, no, it does not. And it wouldn't end well for you either if you're Sergeant
Hartman.
If I'm
the drill sergeant in this analogy, not well for me either. Unless I'm, even if I'm Private Joker, I don't think eventually things went that great for him either.
No, it just took longer. Definitely not. Yeah, it's exactly right.
In any case, to leave the world of metaphor and me being the kind of dick that makes jokes about beating my son up, I love the kid. He's awesome. He's I don't think in any way, you know, he just feels a little sad, right?
Yeah.
We obviously can't do the things, everything we want to do. And I think for kids, I think that not everybody's taken into account some of the emotional kind of impact of all of this. Like their lives have been upended in a way none of us, I mean, you know, most of the time when you're a parent, you're like, you can go to the kids and be like, I've been through this.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can't offer any advice here, and neither can the two generations or three before me. Like, none of us have been in this situation, and it's disrupted things a bit and disrupted relationships with friends. And, you know, I think taken away, I mean, talk about losing your innocence early on in terms of, you know, your fear about what's out there in the world. I mean, my God.
What was that conversation like? The very first conversation, COVID becomes a thing 14, 16 months ago. What was the conversation that you had with your boys about it? I mean, it had to have been some variation of, well, you got to be careful now because people out there are breathing poison. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't that harsh, but I mean, how did you present it to them? How did you and your wife deal with it?
It's like everyone is the monster next to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it wasn't easy. I mean, we sat. So, at the time they're 13 and 10. We sat down. what ended up happening. So my older son, which I know you'll love with the good musical taste you have, is a rock and roll drummer and a singer, and just taught himself Dream on keyboards because he can do stuff like that.
He's
so much smarter than I am. It's unbelievable. and he did a version. He loves Aerosmith. That's his favorite band, which I'm so happy about that.
Good.
I love Ariana Grande. I'd be like, no.
That's right. There are far worse bands that he could be into, recording artists that he could be into these days. That's for sure.
Like, you want to like Ariana Grande, you can do that. Do that on your own time,
though. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not on family time. No, I mean, the irony is we saw Aerosmith. So it was a year ago, February. This is relevant to what you asked me.
Yeah.
We went out for their February break that they get. We went out to Vegas. My kids definitely heard all rock and roll from me and my wife, either a combo of rock and roll, 80s music, the 90s sort of stuff, the kind of stuff we love. And they started getting into it. So we took them to a Bruce show in Pittsburgh, which was a blast.
Yeah.
You know, we took them to see certain other bands of Ride 'Em Heart, Train, this, that, the thing. But then Aerosmith was doing a residency in Vegas. And so we went over the last February holiday. And it was right then that we were staying in Vegas. MGM Grand, that's what I'm looking for. But we're walking around and we're starting to hear people talk about this new virus that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
You heard about this COVID thing that's coming and whatever, and even people in Vegas, but we didn't know anything about it. We got back and we had plans. It was literally the final day of their spring break in March. We had plans to go down and see my mom, who spends winters in Florida, and we were like, we realized we had to cancel. My son did his show that he did the drums for Love Stinks, which is awesome.
Oh wow.
He did that for their talent show. This is a year and a few months ago. And then like the school announced, they're like, this is the last time we're having a get together. We're going to shut down a few weeks after spring break to try to figure this out. And of course they never went back.
Yeah.
And that's when we started talking to the kids. And that conversation was just, look guys, like, this happened like 100 years ago. It's happened in other countries. You've read about certain things, you know, at least the for you guys, if the worst happens and you get it, it seems to be a very, very low rate of people getting seriously sick. And what they always know is they know more than a lot of kids because their mom and dad have worked in politics and nonprofits and they hear more,
sure.
Right?
Like, yeah.
The night that Trump won and we were expecting Hillary to win, like, they probably saw the looks on our faces. I know they did. We're like, oh my God.
Do they ever say, okay, mom, dad, enough politics. Stop talking about politics. Do you ever get that?
They do. And I appreciate that about them because I sometimes worry because, my older son will say things like, I don't hang out with that guy. He's a Republican. I'm like, okay.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
I know. I'm like, I get that on some level, but we do have some family members we love who are, and we do have some other people we know, and like we gotta find the balance between our values, which what infuses our politics, are important, and yet at the same time, we don't wanna right away be like writing people off, and it's finding a balance. But they know more and they've heard more, so I don't think it was the kind of out of nowhere thing it might be with some people, because sadly they'd heard of horrible things that had happened in the world because they hear us talking about stuff. I'm on the board of the Innocence Project, which I know, you've helped us out a lot, Bob, by making amazing videos.
Oh, well, thank you.
Ohio.
It's an amazing privilege. Thank you for letting me be a part of that. Yeah.
Our privilege is to have you be a part of it. And so they've heard me, talking about Ricky Jackson, who was in prison for 39 years for something he didn't do.
Yeah.
And the fact that a witness was threatened and to be beaten and his family beaten by the police so that he testify against him. So they never were so naive as to think that that the world can't be an ugly place. But I do think this is a whole different level. And so we just had to sit down and keep telling them, be like, look, guys, we don't know what the long-term effects of this are. At least the mortality rate seems low, particularly your age group. But we're going to, we believe in science. And they understood that because we've talked about that. We believe in science. We believe in statistics. We believe in what's real, and we're going to follow everything we can. And, we're going to come together as a family and do what we can to protect ourselves. But I think the other thing we try to instill in our family, and I think this is what really gets me, and I'm not saying this to like pump myself up or my family. I'm far from perfect. I can be a complete asshole, just, as a warning to everybody.
Of course you can.
But like, we believe in a democratic society. We believe in a public good.
Yeah.
Which means everything that happens for our society to work in the way it's supposed to, it can't just be what's good for me. You know, that you're going to go see people at times, members of your family who are older and aren't in as good shape. You're going to come across people that maybe have had certain, you know, diseases or certain whatever, like who are more vulnerable to this. And we have to think about them too.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're going to do what's best. We're going to, you know, we're going to give up some of our freedom. We're going to give up some of our ability to go around and do stuff, but we're going to do it because it's what's best for everybody. Mm. And in that way, that's probably a good lesson, frankly.
Yeah.
It sucks that it had to be learned this way. And the last thing I'll say about it is I thought finally we're coming out. And of course now, because I was starting to feel comfortable, as I said, we tepidly sort of dipped our toe back in the shallow water. And we've gone to some places that where we felt were, you know, good restaurants where we knew that we knew the people there, or we knew that the fact that these are places that don't need a big COVID outbreak. It would destroy them because the you know, and all that. And we made sure that we were set in areas where we were spaced from people somewhat. But we just started doing that, you know, after we were all vaccinated and being careful with my youngest son and having him wear a mask everywhere except for where he was eating.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, now it looks like we may have to back away from that a little bit. We slowly have. And I've actually even myself now, I'd stopped wearing a mask here and there indoors, like the big places that I know get people from all over.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like there's a lot of people, and I don't feel like I trust as much. Supermarkets, whatever, I kept wearing it. The places like our little local coffee shop here, where I'm in and out in a minute or two,
mm-hmm.
or whatever, and I know most of the people in there, and they're well-educated folks who I know are all vaccinated. We have conversations and whatever. I felt like, but now even there, one person wanders in who I don't know and is unvaccinated and ends up getting me sick. You know, even if it's not serious for me, I give it to my 11-year-old. I mean, how would I feel about that? I'd hate myself.
Yeah, that what you just said, that's the key to all of this. There are so many people who are approaching this as if it's all about them and whether they personally get sick and whether they should get vaccinated. It's not just about them. It's about everyone around them. Frankly, speaking for myself, if I get sick, fine, I'll deal with that. What would destroy me is getting my family sick or getting Kimberly sick or getting Kimberly sick and then Kimberly getting her niece sick and the chain of people and infection goes on and on and on. And that's the thing that I can't possibly begin to fathom.
Well, that's what's so frustrating about all of this, right? I mean, the thing is that, you know, if you ever read like Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know if you ever read that or not, but I mean, it was applicable to marketing, but it was applicable, and he purposely made it to social phenomenon. Like, I remember he covered one island, you know, in the Pacific where there were a rash of suicides because it started becoming the thing that kids did.
Wow.
Right? And like, if you were upset, and it's horrible, you got to find ways to break those patterns.
Yeah.
But to me, the pattern we got here is, and this is what Mitch McConnell and all these ghouls could, you know, I guess, didn't care enough or couldn't imagine, which is, you're getting this guy in office, and with him, you're getting your judges and your whatever. But there's been some sort of maladjusted sociopaths on your side, you know, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, plenty of them, but nobody quite like this guy.
Yeah.
Nobody with the level of viciousness, the level of cruelty, the outrageousness, and you can't put that back in a box because that's a cultural thing. So once he's doing that regularly and all his people are seeing it, that inspires, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's probably lying in a pit somewhere, you know, doing tantric sex with God knows who and whatever, you know, was like, hey, I can run for office now and be this evil person. Like, it inspires people.
Yeah, right.
To behave a certain, it brings all the worst dregs out of society. And it also inspires people that maybe thought these things but didn't have the courage to say them. Now they're like, well, I can say them. And so like, that took over not just the whole Republican Party, but so, you know, or most of it, but so much of our culture. And like, I was watching that idiot Republican Congressman Chip Roy screaming on the floor today, you know, about, oh my God, you know, because he wanted to get rid of the mask mandate, and all Democrats and seven Republicans, only seven in the House, voted to keep the mask mandate. And so he starts screaming, and he's like, which is it, vaccines or masks and all this stuff? And I just wanted to be like, I'm going to remind myself again and make sure it's okay. I can curse on your show plenty, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Curse away.
And I want to be like, listen, you fucking bald motherfucker. I want to just grab him by his fucking goatee and be like, listen, you selfish piece of shit, you. All right? Yeah. We've lost 620,000 people who are fucking dead now. Mm-hmm. How many people who because of their stints in hospitals, will never be the same? Their lungs will never be the same. Their body will never function the same. You know, we've traumatized kids. We've done all this stuff. And you, who're supposed to be an adult, you're fucking yelling because on the floor because the thing you're most upset about is you might have to put a mask on, you goddamn selfish motherfucker.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that's what I want to say to all. I just have had it, like, with the unvaccinated. I've had it with the people screaming and yelling about that they have to make a sacrifice for the common good. Poor Chip Roy.
Yeah.
Life must be really tough, right? You know, you have to wear a mask when you're inside the chamber because that's a way of keeping other people safe.
Because of something his own disciples have done and the disciples of Donald Trump have done. Make no mistake. What this is like a shitty rock and roll band destroying their hotel room at the Howard Johnson's. And then as soon as the room service guy comes in, they say, hey, look what you've done in here. You've ruined my hotel room. And the room service guy is like, I just came here to bring you pancakes. You know, that's what I mean. They're ruining the place and then saying, why won't you believe the science? Why? Well, and what? Now you guys are talking about science. Why get vaccinated? If you're so into the science, get your people vaccinated, for God's sake. Then we don't have to worry about masks.
Right. And so finally, that it took all of this to get at least some of these assholes.
Yeah.
To get Mitch McConnell to speak up more about getting vaccinated. I saw something from Roy Blunt the other day. And I was like, that's great. Here's this guy, this old sort of more old line Republican who I find to be more guilty. The Rob Portmans and Roy Blunts and ones who've been around for a while who just whistled past the graveyard and sort of kept their mouths shut as the lunatics took over the asylum, you know, when they could have stood up. And I want to say, and Roy Blunt, of course, is leaving now because I'm sure it's gotten even too ugly for him.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't just vote like an asshole and keep my mouth shut anymore. You know, to get reelected now, you have to actually be an outward asshole, right? A performative asshole like Eric Greitens and attack women and God knows what else you need to do. And so he's, you know, and finally he stands up and I retweeted it and I appreciate it. It's good because maybe he'll convince some people. I did see that we had our biggest day of vaccinations yesterday since I think July 1st or 2nd. You know, like it does seem like him opening his mouth, even if Hannity later took it back, even on that one Fox News show telling people to get vaccinated, you know, having that freaking former Klansman, what's his name? Which one, right?
Exactly. They're all former Klansmen. They're all current
Steve
Klansmen.
Scalise.
Steve Scalise.
Right. Steve Scalise, who finally, I mean, Louisiana, another place that literally is being torn apart right now because of its low. It's, you know, these are all places, you know, this is a place with a 33-35% vaccination rate.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about the math of that. Every time you walk into, if you were to walk into a bar without a mask on, how many of the people there, the majority of people on average, depending on what neighborhood you're in, probably the majority of people are not vaccinated.
That's right.
You know, and so finally this guy does it 6 months after he had access, 3 months before I did, you know, or you or anybody else probably. And he makes a big deal of it. It's like, well, I appreciate you guys are doing it. And now it's heading in the right direction. But like, you assholes couldn't have done this 4 months ago.
And the other thing is about Scalise is that he was particularly vulnerable to it because he was shot and almost died a few years ago. I don't know what the extent of his injuries were, but it seems like someone who sustained that level of injury at some point would be a little bit more susceptible to the virus. So taking so long to get vaccinated.
Definitely.
The thing that I can't get beyond, Cliff, I'd love to get your take on this, is will there ever be a crisis, or will there ever be a time in which politics is left at the water's edge and then we all come together? Like, I imagine, like, the post 9/11 era, the first 2 weeks or so before politics kind of reemerged, there was a period of time in which everyone was kind of on the same page. No one was trying to demonize anything or anyone else. And we were all just Americans for that period of time. Is there ever going to be a time for that again? Because it seems like the lesson that we're learning from COVID, among many other lessons, is that, well, no matter what happens, it's going to be brutally politicized. And that's what we're seeing now with the vaccinations, with masks, everything having to do with COVID.
Well, in my heart of hearts, I want to believe that we can get back to a time of where, you know, at least the majority of people in office you know, are acting in good faith. Mm-hmm. And the carnival barkers, there's always a few of them, you know, in the 80s, Jesse Helms stood in a corner and screamed and yelled and still acted like he did. Yeah. You know, Bob Dornan, if you remember that mm-hmm. idiot B1 Bob.
I forgot about that.
These folks have been there, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but I, you know, the perfect metaphor or perfect comparison is probably the better way of putting it is, I remember B1 Bob himself on the Republican convention floor floating the idea about Bill Clinton. This is 1992, going to being recruited by the KGB and going to Russia, because he went to Russia on like some sort of a spring break or whatever when he was at Oxford. I don't know if you remember all this.
Yeah.
If you were paying attention back then or not.
Oh yeah.
And people were just, and everybody was just like, shut the fuck up. You know, like he was just a clown in the corner, right?
Yeah.
He was Marjorie Taylor Greene, but instead of like it being Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert and Madison Cawthorn and Louie Gohmert and Chip Roy, you know, and go on and on and on, and it being a majority of their caucus, there are a couple of clowns. The problem now, Bob, is I see it is, and not to cast aspersions on your podcast here or my lovely podcast, Unprecedented. You should all listen and subscribe. But part of it's internet, but I would take sort of like I take three kind of evolutions, mm-hmm. if you will. First, cable TV coming about. Then the next level would be just internet in general and people, you know, email lists and all this kind of garbage and the way people fundraise on fear and the rest. Somebody I know wrote a book. What was it, One Country Under Fear or something like that? I feel like that guy might know something about this.
Yeah.
Everyone should buy that book.
I remember no one bought it. And that's all I remember about that book, whoever that was. I feel bad for the author of that book.
They say timing is everything, Bob. They say timing is everything.
Yeah.
That book coming out after the Democrats took back the House in 2006, probably, you know, it caused some problems. I've gotten screwed by timing more than you can imagine.
Right.
And then the next level being the sort of world of social media and the ability for people to all gatekeepers being gone and the ability to people to sort of monetize their mania.
Yeah.
In your case, you're monetizing good information on your own. You're sharing people. You're entertaining people. You're doing that with your podcast. I hope we're doing the same with ours.
Yeah.
But, you know, Substack and podcast and all this have been like, you know, along with the way to promote them via social media mm-hmm. is kind of that third stage of evolution. And all this to me seems to create a situation where all the incentives, and because the barriers are down now, right? Mm-hmm. The parties have open primaries. The parties used to choose people and you know, everybody hates the smoke-filled rooms, but that's how they used to choose so that you didn't get a lunatic. They picked sort of relatively center-left, center-right, moderate-esque type folks. Well, now because it's all sort of open, right, and people have so much the ability to monetize this, you can be a lunatic like a Glenn Greenwald, mm-hmm. or you know, Tucker Carlson's doing it on Fox News, so maybe that's not the right, but like, you know, be a complete conspiracy theorist asshole, and now I have a Substack for you to subscribe to.
That's right.
You know, and so you grab your piece of the market. The difference is that we're not talking about you're not selling bottled water, mm. you know, you're not selling like, you know, some sort of a toy. You're selling an idea that kills people.
Yeah.
And you are such a ghoul, you being one, not you, Bob, that you can do this via social media and via creating a brand, quote unquote, for yourself. And so that's my problem is I can't figure out unless we start realizing that free speech is not absolute.
Yeah.
That inciting riot is something that we used to enforce in the past. That, you know, when senators stood up and wouldn't accept Abraham Lincoln's election in 1860, they were thrown out of the Senate. All right. That, I'm not saying all these means are perfect, but like right now when we're letting disinformation flow, when we're not saying, you know, we're not holding people responsible for when they knowingly say things that can get large numbers of people killed. And I get there's a balance here. I'm a writer and I'm a talker. And so it means I believe strongly in the First Amendment.
Yeah.
But I don't believe in the kind of First Amendment where I sit there and I encourage people to go, you know, lynch somebody or to go harm people or to go, you know, and tell people something horrible about somebody and, you know, wink, wink at them. Oh, yeah, you go take care of it. Like, you know, like where does that stop?
I know exactly what you're talking about. In fact, I was going to ask you about this very thing. And there's, I think, a distinction to make. And I've been really kind of doing some soul searching about this and really thinking about this as a topic, the political entertainment industry, or I sometimes refer to it as the Red Hat Entertainment Complex. And
right.
There are I don't know how many hundreds, if not thousands, of Trump disciples, whether they're elected officials, whether they're Republican Party leadership, or all the way down the line, who are their incomes are fully dependent on continuing to deliver disinformation to their gullible fanboys. That is the money they make. That is the industry they have built now. And the conclusion I've reached, Cliff, is that it's not a political entertainment industry. It's not just about politics. What they're doing, what the Red Hats are doing, what Trump disciples, Trump adherents, Q adherents, on down the line, what they are doing is they're monetizing disinformation. It's a disinformation entertainment industry. It's an industry of fiction being pumped into the gullets of all of these fanboys like foie gras ducks. I mean, that's what's happening. They're all lined up. They're right. being filled with the bullshit, lies, disinformation, all of the stuff to keep them freaked out and willing to do whatever they need to do in order to continue handing over their money to the Red Hat Entertainment Complex. And that's the key. It's like televangelism. It's like faith healers going from town to town. Yeah.
Exactly. But I've talked about this so much. It's they borrow from that.
Yeah.
The despicable Huckabees. I hate Huckabees.
Yeah.
the despicable Huckabee family. And, you know, a classic example is, you know, Mike Huckabee's looking for a grift. Mm-hmm. So the first time he becomes a pastor. Right.
Right.
Just the way the first time Mike Pence is looking for a grift, he becomes a right wing radio show host, the way Donald Trump becomes a reality star, you know. But we'll go back for a second to Huckabee. But I'm just trying to make the point that these are all the same basic beast.
Yes.
Right. They're trying to monetize entertaining their entertainment and entertainment based upon fear, mm-hmm. anger, hatred, jealousy. Like any negative sort of emotions, and that's what they're trying to do. Mike Huckabee realizes at some point the even better grift is to run for office. So he stops being a preacher. He runs for governor. He's elected because he's damn good at selling bullshit. And here's how seamlessly he goes between these worlds, which is, you know, the two times he ran for president, he bought the Newsmax email list, which, Jesus Christ, I mean, talk about your Star Wars bar.
Totally.
What the fuck's on that thing? You're like, I mean, in any case.
And, talk about your Star Wars bar.
I mean, exactly. And this guy emailed, sorry, but I mean, think about like the two-headed beasts that are probably on this thing.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, the Balchinians from Men in Black, you know, and in any case. So these guys are like, you know, so what does Huckabee send out? And I feel like for me, I don't know if there's a book in this. I don't know if there's a podcast in this, but I want to do something with this because I don't think enough people talk about this, which mm-hmm. is, so he sends out a mass email to people using his background as a politician, his background as a pastor, really this latter more, a biblical cure for cancer is what he's sending people. And that the son of a bitch did that. And I'm not a lawyer, but how that isn't something that he had to know. He was fleecing people. How that's not every bit the same kind of con that somebody who would walk up to you on the street and be like, I'll make you prettier for $50.
You can go to heaven and be with Jesus if you give me $100 right now.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, if you looked at some of those overhead pictures of the home that Joel Osteen lives in.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, I've seen that.
He just bought a new plane
with
his PPE money that we out of our taxes. And like, this is the guy that when they were having the floods there would not let people in until he was shamed into it, into his church. He's a fucking con man.
Yep. 100%.
The same way they hide behind politics, he hides behind religion. And we've let this whole complex grow. And the problem is that there's always going to be enough people that are greedy as shit and have literally no conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and so the right wing, Rick Perlstein, if you ever read some of his great books, wrote a piece on this, I think, back in the day. And he did a great job on it. It's always made me think of the seamless way within the way other grifts that play on your fear. You're going to die. You know, the guy sitting on the end of the street corner, like, I can tell you when you're going to die. Give me a donation or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just seamlessly fits in with the far right of the last sort of 20 years and as it's grown. And so I don't know how you demonetize that unless we do start saying you're responsible. If you con people, we're going to hold you to account. If you get people to behave in ways, you know. I mean, how can Fox News argue? How can Tucker Carlson and any of them argue when they've had vaccine passports to get in and out of News Corp buildings, right? Mm-hmm. They all had to get vaccinated at News Corp.
Yeah.
They, you know, Rupert Murdoch got the damn thing, I think, before the Queen of England did. You know, like when you see that kind of stuff and you know that these guys knowingly are doing this when they're vaccinated themselves, when they know that the protocols at Fox tell them that they have to be for safety, how is it that we can't, how is it that there isn't a class action lawsuit and they're not destroyed?
I keep thinking in terms of how do we bottle this, or does it ever get bottled again? I mean, I'm talking about this industry of disinformation. The economy of this is so massive that there's no real way that it can ever be shoved back into its tube. I mean, with televangelism, it was one thing because it was kind of limited. It was kind of fringe. There were, yeah, lots of people pumping their money into it. But ultimately, right, in a societal sense, it wasn't creating damage in the system. But now this Red Hat entertainment industry, the disinformation industry, is creating noticeable damage. But we can see.
But again,
it,
that's right? The modern media. That's kind of my point, Bob, is that even like Austin, you know, when I used to watch the Sunday morning shows before I came to the conclusion they're all an absolute waste of my time, thankfully, you know, like after on ABC, I think it was after, like, you know, Stephanopoulos, whoever would be on, they'd go to like an Austin sermon or before he'd be on.
Yeah,
because he makes so much money. He's taking advantage of modern media. You know, these guys have. And that's the problem, is modern media. It used to just be the fringes, because you're right, because you had to stand on a corner with a bullhorn or in your church or whatever. Now you can be on cable TV. Now you can be on Facebook. Now you can be on Twitter with a million or 2 million followers.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the problem is that it, because, you know, there's the good side of all of that. Right. I mean, I'm not taking away from that. Look, I'm on your show right here, and you do a great job of educating and entertaining. Plenty of other people do, too. The problem is the downside of that is that all this stuff's out there, and you're exactly right. It is a disinformation industry. There are people who know it's much easier than getting a real job.
Yeah.
That if you, all you need to do is have a little bit of bullshit in your system and lack, you know, the kind of shame and the kind of, you know, respect for other humans. Mm-hmm. And like, it's all out there for you.
Yep.
I mean, I've seen it. There's a guy who's one of the top anti-vaxxers right now. I may have told you this before. Who is this complete fucking dork I went to high school with, who like is as socially awkward as like a piece of furniture in the room I'm in here right now. Can't basically talk to people in person, but he's created this whole fake persona of, you know, how he's this cool guy and he snaps back at people on Twitter and this and that and the other thing. And he comes from a liberal background, was a New York Times reporter. And so he realized the whole man bites dog bit of it, kind of like Greenwald being gay and Jewish and becoming a right winger, right?
Yeah.
Or Candace Owens being black and a woman, you know, in his case, being a guy with the background he had, the urban, well-educated liberal, you know, or from the liberal background, and then going all anti-vaxxer, was going to be like that all these right wingers would promote him and push him forward and be like, see, this guy, even this guy agrees with us.
Yep.
Now he's got 300,000 followers on Twitter. Of course, he started a Substack. You know, his name's Alex Berenson, by the way. You've probably seen some of his bullshit. I went to high school with him. And like, you know, I mean, he's created an industry.
Yeah.
He realized all you had to do is be as soulless as he is. And he realized he could turn this into an industry and not have to get a real job, because he'll get however many people to sign up for his Substack.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's the problem, is that's where the regulations have to come in. You know, when you talk about putting this back in the bottle, we're not going to get people to suddenly have shame who don't.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's a perfect answer, but I will point out to you that I think most people consider Germany at this point to be a free country. You're not allowed to share publicly Nazi symbols. If you do, it is against the law. You'll be fined. You might go to prison.
Yeah.
You know, in the United Kingdom, you are not allowed to say dishonest things about people knowingly on television. Fox News was kicked off of their system there. They do not have it. Canada, same deal. You know, there's a reason why some of the countries going through some of the worst shit right now, us in Australia, are where the Murdoch empire thrives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's free speech, but just like every other amendment in our constitution, every other constitutional right, you know, there's rights and there's responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've gone to the extreme end of like the First Amendment, to where that we've lost all sense that any responsibility comes with your speech. It's one thing if you're saying some stupid shit on a street corner. the minute that you're broadcasting it out to hundreds of thousands of people, I don't care if it's on Twitter, I don't care if it's on TV, my belief is you now have a much bigger responsibility. And if you are saying things that you know are false and encouraging people to hurt themselves, as far as I'm concerned, you need to be held liable, and you would be in some of these other countries that are also considered democracies.
Absolutely.
And that's the only thing I can come up with as an answer to this, is that the United States needs to really sort of do some soul searching and look at what some other democracies have done and how they've found the balance between free speech but not being able to just open your mouth and endanger people.
Okay, we'll get back to Cliff here in just 1 second. But first, if you ever catch yourself thinking when looking in the mirror, I wish my under eye bags would just disappear, well, you're not alone. Bags and puffiness under the eyes are a problem for millions of American men and women until now. Introducing the new GenuCell Serum with plant stem cell technology from the people at Chamonix. Susan from New Jersey wrote, quote, "I've been using GenuCell for a couple of months. The puffiness around my eyes is gone. Even the crow's feet and small lines have disappeared, and they haven't come back. I love the product. I use it under my eyes, around my cheekbones, and on my eyelids," unquote. With its instant effects, Chamonix says you'll see results in the first 12 hours or your money back. They guarantee it. Order now and get 50% off all GenuCell packages for summer. Go to lovegenucell.com/Stephanie. Link in the description of bobseska.com. lovegenucell.com/Stephanie. Thank you.
The Bob Seska Show.
You know, since I first started working on the internet, which was 1997, I got my first job working on the internet. And ever since then, I have really enjoyed the kind of open free speech. Anything goes. If you can think it, you can do it on the internet, right? It's been so great, I think, for me from a career perspective, speaking in a more cynical light. I've done reasonably well with the internet. But at the same time, while I do cherish free speech, and I like, at least to an extent, the unregulated nature of the internet, the problem is I feel like, in order for us to endure as a society, eventually there are going to have to be regulations on how the internet is used, regulations against how it's being abused right now, whether it's the cynical cash grabs that you see from people like Tucker Carlson and on down the line, Dan Bongino and Charlie Kirk and Candace Owens and all these people who are just cynically raking in money from gullible suckers, right? Eventually, it seems like that's going to have to be reined in. Otherwise, there's going to be chaos we can't even begin to forecast, right?
Well, and that's where I am right now. Yeah. I'm already at that place, you know, where I feel like, of course, and, you know, the internet has been important to my business.
Yeah.
Right. As doing public relations, making TV, making ads, videos, all sorts of writing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I write for a publication that is not a publication people hand out anywhere. It exists online, the Daily Beast. You know, I mean, all of these things. So I'm not saying that, but I should be held responsible, as you should, as anybody else should, if we're purposely saying things that we know to be false, that either defame somebody. I don't care if they're famous or not. You know, this whole sort of, well, you're famous, so you can now say whatever you want about somebody, especially in the age of sort of Twitter mobs and the rest. I mean, if you get something out there about somebody that is not true, you can destroy their career. And we've set the bar so high on that stuff. Again, not the same in the United Kingdom. And sometimes it means we can't do certain stuff. Let me give you a great example. You know, when I wrote my book on McCain, which I'm sure you remember.
Yes, the real
back
McCain.
In the heady days of 2008, I had a story. I had it from three different sources. They were all scared to put their names to it. I'm still in touch with one of them today. You know, all of whom were reporters who heard John McCain call. I can't say this, so I'll just heard him call his wife the C word.
The C word. Yes, I remember. Yeah.
And in the end, my book sort of, they probably sold more copies than almost anything else that I shared in that book.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, all the stuff about his record and his temper, that one thing, John Stewart did a whole little skit on it where they had somebody playing McCain being angry and calling everybody the C word, you know,
There was 6 months in which you were the McCain C word guy. There was a portion of 2008 when you were all about the McCain C word story.
Yeah,
I remember that distinctly.
Of all the copies of my book, it sold. You know, my book hit bestseller status on Amazon, and it's because of that, probably almost definitively, not because of anything intelligent that I said. If I did even so, I mean, but the classic example is there's only one time where I could not tell that story. And again, you could argue that it would have hurt my career, but I would make that sacrifice in a second for a Democratic society. Trust me, which is when I went whatever the biggest newspaper was in Edinburgh, I'm trying to remember the name of it. Is it the Scotsman? Maybe the Scotsman reached out to me and they wanted to do a full interview with me and talk about it. But they said I had to give them the names of my three sources off the record. And I went back to all three people and all three of them were like, no fucking way. Like, we're already scared that we told you, you know, we're not like, you know, you could, we're not telling other. And so that was it. And the Scotsman in the end was like, sorry, we can't run with the story because we'll be sued. Because in the United Kingdom, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. You can't say three anonymous sources, but you know what? Maybe we'd all be better off. You know, I mean, my point is that they have a different standard for libel and for slander over there. And it's a much tougher standard so that, you know, you have a different standard for lying. News stations cannot knowingly tell lies. As I said, that's what led Fox News to be pulled off the air in the United Kingdom. You cannot, as I mentioned, the Nazi symbols in Germany, those are just some examples, but like we have those, we've chosen not to apply that in this country. We certainly have some of those things. I can't yell fire in a crowded theater. I'm not allowed to do that. I do. When somebody gets trampled, I'm in serious shit. We're not allowed to threaten the president's life.
Sexual harassment
are words you are saying, but we have now decided that certain words you say, sorry, you cannot say those words because they are harmful to people in a work atmosphere. So we've done this. We've obviously decided that in certain places, certain times, certain atmospheres, words can be dangerous. And yet we're not applying it to our public space, to our political culture. And I would argue, as you just said, we're going to need to regulate this stuff. I don't see how we exist as a society because it now crosses borders. As you know, you've got Russians and bots. And what, I mean, there are too many people with a financial or a material, you know, with a material or a sort of who have a will to power and have an interest in causing chaos, causing injury or death, that can use cable TV, social media, other things to do that.
And the one thing that concerns me about regulating the internet specifically is how exactly does it happen? Like, I understand the notion of not gratuitously defaming someone, but at the same time, I get concerned about things like slap suits being weaponized. And there's quite a movement. I mean, the Republicans scream about cancel culture. They love cancel culture. They have embraced cancel culture with both arms and both legs, and they are just humping away at cancel culture. And the thing
will
that
they hump it into submission.
Yeah. And one of the weapons of choice that they love are defamation suits. And I'm talking about frivolous defamation suits. So while we're regulating the internet eventually, and I'm not even proposing any specifics as far as that goes, I don't know how it's going to work, but I think there needs to be carve-outs for the frivolous weaponized lawsuits against public participation, which we see quite often happening. And, you know, whether it's Jason Miller or Devin Nunes, I could do a whole roster of Republicans who are really abusing, you know, the defamation lawsuit process.
I don't see this as one, you know, like you have to choose one or the other. Mm-hmm. I mean, the truth is that you get people who really have been defamed quite clearly.
Yeah.
Or really have been threatened quite clearly. I've had people share their, you know, dox them or do other things to them that are harmful. And then you have exactly what you're pointing out, the cynical use. And look, that exists out there every day too. And that's just a whole nother thing that we need to regulate and take care of.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I had a former client who was going through some rough times and I did the work I was supposed to do, you know, and then he decided he changed his mind, didn't want to do this campaign anymore. And wanted all of his money back after I'd done like 2/3 of the work. And I was like, no, I'll give you half your money back, whatever. And then he sued me. You know, and I had to hire a lawyer you know, other folks who were in a position where if they lost five or six or however many thousands I had to spend to get this ridiculous thing kicked out, it might have broken them. I was lucky that wasn't me. You know, but then this guy would have won. And this is what we know. Donald Trump used this for years. Powerful people use this all the time. They just threaten. They know they'll bleed you in court, which is a whole other thing. Again, you know, I'm not a lawyer. The answer to that is something different as far as I'm concerned. There really need to be a sort of level of, as far, you know, I don't, you could probably do some of this, of judges that their only thing they do is, before any lawyers have to be hired, look at these kinds of suits. Mm-hmm. And for all of the ones that are frivolous and whatever, find the living shit out of people that do it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you never have to hire a lawyer. Somebody does one of these bullshit slap suits against you, you're talking about, Bob? Mm-hmm. Fine. It goes to somebody, it goes to some panel of judges, and that, they are the ones who deal with this kind of crap. And the minute they look at it and say, this is outrageous and this person knew, maybe the first time they get a warning.
Yeah.
They start draining on our legal system after that. They get increasingly very, very large fines. Because again, I don't want that either, where people are just like, I'm defamed and I'm whatever. You know, with like everything else, this is all about finding a balance.
Mm-hmm.
But we're way out of balance in a number of areas. And again, you know, if we let anybody weaponize any disinformation online, you know, I don't think you have to be said, how do we put that back in the bottle? I don't think we can without some kind of regulation.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm open to ideas. If anybody can figure out any other sort of ways to disincentivize people from doing that, who will not be disincentivized by shame because they don't have any,
mm-hmm.
you know, who will not be disincentivized by, you know, any kind of threats, you know, not physical threats, but legal, whatever, because they're sociopaths, that there's nothing else that can stop them from doing this kind of stuff. You've got to find some other way. And yeah. I'm open to what those other ways are besides, I mean, maybe the you know, the court system is another way besides political, right? You know, or not political, but policy regulations, but whatever it is, we've got to figure it out because it's destroying us.
Oh yeah. Yeah. In fact, I always wonder, and just as a thought exercise mainly, okay, for 2 years, we're shutting off the internet. There will be no internet in the United States. I know this is frivolous. It's not actually going to happen. Make no mistake. But just as a thought
Bob's
exercise.
Bob's threatening your internet, everybody. Dox him.
No, yeah. What would happen to American society if we just turned off the internet for everything other than practical purposes, like banking and so on? You need to have some sort of internet for the infrastructure. But in terms of the information that we're receiving, the activities we're engaging in online, if that was all shut down for 2 years, I wonder what we would be like coming out of that. And I can't help but think that we'd be a little bit more civilized. I think that it would actually improve our society a bit, right?
As I talked about with the anti-vaxxer guy I was talking about, who literally couldn't say three words to your face in public because he'd probably vomit on himself. But like, does it on Twitter? Like, you know about this. You and I did this. I remember joined in, was it with Sherry Jacobus or whatever, about anonymous people on Twitter. And then all these people freaked on me.
Right.
You know,
yep,
we're
me
like,
too.
You dick, you're just a blue check elitist. Yes. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I'm fine, as Sherry was saying, with you being able to be on Twitter, read whatever you want.
Yeah.
Comment in certain ways, in certain places. But or maybe there should just be a function where they can do whatever the hell they want, but I can push a button and say nobody anonymous gets to comment on anything that I do. Then it has to be, you know, you have to have a real name and a real picture, because the truth is that all these folks feel – it's almost like – I really do. You know, I brought up Greenwald before. He's another one. Have you ever been in his presence? Did you ever meet him before, Bob?
No, I've never actually met him face-to-face. I've emailed. I've had conversations with him, but nothing personally.
Literally the personality of like of my flat screen TV that's turned off. Like, like, you know, I'm sorry. There's a reason the dude was going down to meet his 19-year-old husband on a beach down there. Mm. And it's not because he has charisma.
Yeah.
Okay. The fact of the matter is that, but he feels like a big tough guy on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because he could be on, you know, then even though he's got his face, it's different. You couldn't stop him because, and you couldn't stop the anti-vaxxer guy I brought up. But there's a lot of people like them who don't use their picture and don't use their, you know, don't use their real name. Mm. And they can do all sorts of stuff where they feel empowered to do they would never dare do otherwise.
Mm.
And I'm just saying, like, some of these things we're going to have to figure out. It's not easy. But there's no doubt that we are a more coarse society. We are nastier because of social media, because people feel this freedom to behave in ways they would never dare behave in person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, again, I don't think it's all easily solvable. I'm not saying that, but I don't think we can keep letting it go down the road it's going down.
No.
I mean, if we've looked at what's happened with COVID, you think that you think we're going to solve the climate crisis? You think we're going to solve the crisis of gun violence in our society? I mean, what crisis are we going to be able to solve? Well, there's all sorts of independent players out there who know they can monetize,
mm-hmm.
you know, histrionics and conspiracies and, you know, and threats and all the other stuff they do. Like, are you going to ever be able to solve anything? Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger have both said they know of numerous Republicans who agree with them but are too scared to do anything because they're scared for their safety. Where do we think that's coming from?
Right.
It's people that can organize online and threaten them. And I mean, I'm sure they're getting all sorts of threats. It probably scares them. And I'm not making, by the way, I'm not accepting it as an excuse. That comes with the territory. You know, Martin Luther King, who lost his life for freedom, didn't sit down because he was getting threats. So I would say to you, if you're a congressman or senator and the heat's too much in the kitchen, get out of the kitchen.
Right.
If you're gonna run for office, you owe us something, which is you owe us courage. So don't think I'm connected. But I will say clearly the level of vitriol and what goes on and what we've allowed to happen on a cable, but even more so online, anonymously, has changed our society for the worse in those ways. And we can't figure out big problems. So something's going to have to change.
Well, here's something that just came down while we've been talking. God, I'd love to get your view on Kyrsten Sinema right now, because I can't think of a single Democrat who actually likes Kyrsten Sinema, who actually said, you know what, Kyrsten Sinema, she's actually doing a good job, Bob. You're being unfair to Kyrsten Sinema. No one has said that to me. So now the news just came down that she does not support, big shock here, she does not support the current Democratic $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill, the one that they were going to pass through reconciliation. She does not support it because of its price tag, because of the $3.5 trillion price tag.
She's bought. I mean, is she not the perfect example of everything we've been talking about?
Mm-hmm.
This clownish figure who rose to prominence. I sat on a panel with her at a yearly Coast convention a decade ago.
Oh, wow.
Just to give you an idea. So I've met her before. And the reason why she was on that panel, because she went around and built this huge social media following. She already had like a huge number of followers on Facebook and Twitter, even though she was just a state rep. You know, building this whole brand and this whole sort of thing about her.
Huh.
And she uses that to leverage her way to the House and then the U.S. Senate. She's in a way that I can say few people who are not Republicans are, she's an absolute fucking clown. She has no beliefs. Everything in her life is look at me, look at me, look at me. It reminds me of Ted Cruz or what, you know, or folks like that. She was literally, you know, how long ago? A decade ago, half a decade ago, screaming, yelling about how we need to get rid of the filibuster. We'd never get a $15 minimum wage if we kept it, and all this sort of stuff has completely switched on everything.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks she's a character out of the show Schitt's Creek. She's wearing a different fucking wig and ridiculous, you know, light. I mean, she's like the mom, except for what's her name was hilarious.
That's right.
This is of somebody who's a U.S. senator who shows up in these ridiculous. I mean, I'm sorry if anybody thinks I'm being sexist. Listen to how I talk about like seersucker suits that some of these idiots have worn on who are men, you know, some of these Southern men on the Republican side and whatever. I mean, equal opportunity. If you beclown yourself, you're a clown.
Yes, right? Of course.
I'm sorry. I don't care if you're a man or a woman or whatever you are. You come, if you have certain kinds of professions, one of them being there, you sort of adhere to certain sort of, you know, accepted practices. And one of them is you don't walk in the room with a different wig every day and a different ridiculously loud outfit just so people will look at you.
Yeah.
You know, treat the goddamn office with the respect it deserves,
mm-hmm.
you know? And like, so I'm not surprised at all because she literally is a social media creation. That's what she is. Like, she'd never be there in the Senate if it weren't for that. She built this huge number of followers by going to all these events and demagoguing on this and that and the other thing. You know, reminds me of fucking, you know, somebody else who have got to help us if we get stuck with on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, just to show I'm not being biased against perceived moderates or whatever you want to call mm-hmm. conservative Democrats like Sinema or leftists. But Nina Turner, who's also an absolute clown.
Yeah. Yep.
And I'm sorry, I know her from interactions. I had to deal with her when I worked for a top state official here. I've seen it on a private level. I've seen it on a public level. She's ready for Hillary. And then, but like 6 months later, she's ready to join Jill Stein's ticket. She's whatever she needs to be on any given day. She's social media driven. She has no beliefs except for her narcissism. She's a fucking clown. And like, you know, and like we have these figures wandering around. That is going to be the future. If we don't figure out how to deal with this, that's our future.
Like, I mean,
our entire Senate and House are people like that.
She's been in the Senate for like 5 minutes, Cliff. Where is Democratic leadership pulling back on the reins and saying, hey, listen, you're the freshman. No, is Mark Kelly the freshman senator?
Yeah, she came before he did. So he is, I think.
Okay.
Even though he was filling in for someone. But it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You're right.
She's brand new. I mean, suffice to say, she's brand new. And where is Chuck Schumer to say, okay, look, you're being overzealous. You're overly asserting yourself here into the conversation. What you need to do is play as part of the team for now. And then maybe once you get reelected and show you have staying power here as part of the Democratic caucus on the Senate side, then you can start to step forward and assert your power here, given that we're 50-50. I mean, I'm not necessarily a creature of the Senate, but I know enough to know that if you're brand new in the Senate, you aren't given any power. And when you try to take power, you are quickly snapped back. I mean, I could be totally wrong on this, but that seems like that's the tradition over there.
That's the way it was in the past, at least. I mean, to me, I think I saw something the other day where 75% of Arizona Democrats want somebody to primary her. they need, again, I always try to say we can all just lose our shit and try to make apples and oranges into just apples, or we could analyze each situation, realize that there's emotion there. We're angry, but you still have to logically figure it out.
Yeah.
And so when people try to compare her to Joe Manchin, I've always said, I don't think he's a clown. I think he's a jackass in a whole different way. I think he's a pompous ass, who thinks a lot more of himself than he should.
Mm-hmm.
But, West Virginia, we're never getting anything better than him.
Yeah.
It's West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a top five Republican state where in the same election, Trump was winning it by like 38 points, and somehow Manchin found a way to hold on there. Now, you may just say, win enough senators if you can to say he's not worth it, the trouble, that's fine if that's your view. But right now, we need him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The difference I'm pointing out here is that Arizona is a state that's been trending to the left. It's not one that Joe Biden lost by 38 points or something. It's one that Joe Biden actually won, first time a Democrat did since 96.
Mm-hmm.
It's they elected a Democratic Secretary of State. They elected another Democratic U.S. Senator. They elected a number of other statewide officials who are Democrats. It's got a huge minority population. It's moving to the left. There's simply no reason that you need to have a Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, Cliff, I got to ask you about, of course, the 1-6 Select Committee and the first day of testimony yesterday. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most infuriated, how angry did yesterday's testimony make you?
Roughly 47.
Good answer. That's accurate. I mean, yeah, me too.
It wasn't just a testimony. It was the reaction by the clowns on the other side. It's, again, Laura Ingraham then going on that night and mocking and handing out like Emmy type awards, acting like these were performances. These people, I mean, I said this on our podcast, there's very little that gets me angrier. If you see any infamous, famous, whatever you want to call it, like movie, about the people leaving others behind in the field of battle for money. I was thinking, I came up with like The Wild Geese. I don't know if you ever saw that.
No.
With Sir Richard Harris and Roger Moore, famous cast where, it's like a bunch of mercenaries, late 70s, early 80s movie. There have been others since then, but I used to watch that with my dad. So I think of that one, and the one group of mercenaries gets paid off to just leave the other guys basically to die. The people that hired them, with that kind of a betrayal. That's what this feels like to me. Like these people, these Capitol Police were literally giving their lives for you. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
They were there, you Republican congressional fuckers, you. They were there in hand-to-hand combat, being stabbed, punched, gouged, sprayed, kicked, squeezed in between doors and the rest, and they were doing all this and risking their lives and suffering injuries. And they were doing it so that to save your lives. And your response to that now is to leave them on the field of battle, essentially kick them aside like garbage.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine anything more disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah.
If I try.
And that's what I mean. There's so much money in creating the disinformation and just trying to, and this brings us back full circle in a sense, and trying to monetize the demonization of the Capitol Police officers who were protecting the Article I powers, make no mistake, and unflinchingly protecting the Article I powers. And yet, we're going to throw them under the bus anyway, because that's where the money is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what Laura Ingraham and her folks believe that will get their viewers excited. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I'm sure every one of these little, these obnoxious douches on the right who has their own podcast or their own whatever, we're saying the same thing. I mean, that's the thing, right? Is like they don't care. So you can't, again, when you see people do that, you realize you're not going to shame them into us back into having a decent society, because these are people without shame. They simply, they crave power and they crave money, and you know, that's it.
Yeah.
And so you have to think what you can do when dealing with people like that to make things better. Because so in any case, for me, it was incredibly powerful. I think Kevin McCarthy is a complete moron. Mm-hmm. You know, what will happen from this? It's hard to know. We've talked a million times before. The Republicans have invested a shit ton more money in their messaging machine than us, you know, and they're much more, they're much more disciplined about being on message. But I swear, if there's any time we should be able to just destroy them, you'd think it would be with this. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, both McConnell and McCarthy here, each of whom had chances to make sure they were Republicans there, you know, separating out our narrative, you know, and not Jim Jordan, which would have just made things worse. They almost were saved by that. This clown that I think would have backfired to every normal person who's not a maggot, you know, but if they had, you know, your John Thunes or people like that sitting there, people that we know are right wing, you know, or have horrible politics, but come off like decent, thoughtful people.
Yeah, they're patriots.
Right. And they at least come off that way, the normal people who are watching. They could have had them asking sort of pressing questions and interrupting the narrative of what these officers were offering, and then Liz Cheney and Kinzinger and all the emotion, and they chose not to. So instead, it ended up being a devastating, you know, kind of portrayal. Now, what difference that'll make, I guess we'll have to see.
But, yeah.
You know, by forfeiting and walking away, they're gonna lose the narrative as hard as they try not to.
Any guests you guys are working on for the Unprecedented podcast?
A bunch. I don't want to give no names, only in that, like, it's nobody who I think we've nailed down yet. But, you know, we've got some cool ones, hopefully. We had not that long ago, we had Carville on, which was pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What
was that like coming from your end? I mean, was that just like jumping on a roller coaster and I don't know where this goes, but let's just hang on for dear life? Yeah.
It was a lot like that. And as somebody who was growing up wanting to work in this field, like, he was, you know, he was obviously somebody who I knew of and had seen, and, you know, and was, I'll admit, when I was young, was even a little bit in awe of. Mm. And so it was just weird. But like, he's as funny and crazy as you hear he is. I mean, he was definitely fascinating.
Yeah.
So that was a pretty cool interview. You know, but we've got some people we're talking to, but nobody that where I feel like we know we're having them on that I would announce them yet.
All right. Well, the podcast, of course,
maybe
is called.
You.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, how about that? Why not? I would love to come on your show one of these days.
I didn't mean to have you back on.
Yeah.
Here you go, folks. Bob's now. He's agreed. You cannot take it back unless he edits this out. So he's coming on.
Now you've caught my ulterior motive in having you on. The whole intention of today's show was to get you to invite me on your show. That was the whole point.
You are a tricky bastard.
The podcast is called The Unprecedented Podcast. Patreon.com/unprecedentedpod and at sexyliberal.com, part of the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. It is your podcasting superstation. Thanks so much, my friend. I really appreciate you coming on today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Bye.